Welcome, everyone. Let everybody get a chance to sit down, and we'll begin. Thank you very much for coming this evening. I think we've got a fun evening in store. Some really great folks in front of you here on the stage. And thank you for sharing your time with us and letting us get to know you a little bit better. My name is Clint Schroeder. I am the president of the Hagedorn Corporation's Communications Division, which incorporates the Hagedorn Media and Newspaper Groups, Hawaii, Idaho, Montana, and Washington. So it's a great privilege for me to be here as well. Thank you, Carolyn Lobsinger, for the invitation. And in short order, I think we should begin. On behalf of the Daily Bee and our media partners, KRFY, Sandpoint Online, and the Sandpoint Reader, as well as Selkirk Association of Realtors, I would like to welcome everyone here once again. Those of you listening and on KRFY and watching online. This legislative candidate forum, of course, is in preparation for our May 19th primary election. I appreciate everybody's flexibility on the schedule adjustment, and I want to thank our legislative candidates for being with us tonight. A quick reminder, this is the first of two forums. The second of our forums, which will feature the candidates contested Bonner County races, will take place tomorrow, Tuesday, May 5th, and will be emceed by the Sandpoint Reader. Tomorrow's forum will also start at 5:30 and will be held here in the high school auditorium. We encourage all voters to attend or to tune in on KRFY. While some questions this evening have been prepared in advance, and tomorrow night, same practice, the audience is invited to submit questions as we go through this evening's program. Paper and pens are available, and we'll have helpers roaming around the auditorium to run the questions up here to Mr. Bessler. Joining us today are Legislative District 1 candidates. Seeking the Republican nod for District 1 Idaho Senate are Scott Herndon and incumbent Jim Woodward. Seeking the 1A House of Representatives seat on the Republican ticket are Jane Sauter and incumbent Mark Sauter. No relation, by the way. Seeking the Republican nomination for 1B House of Representatives seat is Chuck Loban and incumbent Cornell Razor. Running unopposed as an independent for state Senate seat is Steve Johnson. Running unopposed as a Democrat for the 1A House seat is Karen Matei. And running unopposed as an independent for the 1B House seat is Catherine Larson. I want to welcome all candidates. Please give them a round of applause. In tonight's forum, candidates in contested races will have 2 minutes to introduce themselves, 2 minutes to answer each question, and then they'll have 2 minutes for closing remarks at the end of the forum. This is a question and answers forum. Candidates will not be given time for rebuttal. You will be given time to answer those questions directly, and it's everybody's best interest to speak with facts and about yourself and your platform. Please don't speak about your opponent. Remember, time is being strictly managed. Use it wisely. I'll be assisted by an administrator and a timer right down here in front. If you'd raise your hands, thank you. And you'll get a 15-second warning and a stop sign. These forums provide a unique opportunity to connect with those seeking to serve our community. There's a lot to cover, so without further delay, let's get started. We've invited our legislative candidates who are running unopposed to speak for 5 minutes on their campaigns. Following the forum, they'll be available for questions in the Commons area. Note, those 5 minutes are for the unopposed races only. 2 minutes for our opposed races. First up, Steve Johnson, running as an independent for District 1 Senate seat. Please join us on stage. You packed your lunch.
Well, I'm Steve Johnson. I'm a lunch bucket independent who focuses on daily living costs and things that will improve, I hope, the regular lives of most of us. I'm a farmer, a home builder. Oh, there's a lunch bucket of dads. A small business owner and a semi-retired teacher. I'm married to Marguerite, my childhood sweetheart, and now my adulthood sweetheart. We have four amazing children, nine wonderful grandchildren. My mom and dad bought our family farm in Sagal in 1957, and it's been home ever since. My main goal as a state senator is to improve the daily lives of Idaho citizens. I believe affordability issues are the top priority. We all know the cost of living continues to increase, including gas, food, utilities, housing, and health care. Oftentimes, you will hear it said that politicians are all the same and there's really no difference. Well, in my opinion, in this race for District 1 State Senate, there are significant differences among the candidates. I want to emphasize several important differences between myself and candidate Scott Herndon. Number one, I will always support keeping public lands in public hands. Public lands belong to all of us. It is where we hike and hunt and picnic and enjoy our beautiful natural world. Scott Herndon has advocated selling our public lands to the highest bidder, which would obviously remove them from the rest of us. Number two, I fully support public education. I believe the state legislature has a constitutional duty, as written in the Idaho Constitution, to fully fund public education, including the buildings and maintenance. Public education has been one of the main drivers for creating strong communities and economic prosperity. Scott Herndon does not support fully public education. Number three, I believe the legislature's primary focus should be actions that improve the day-to-day lives of Idaho citizens and help answer real questions like, can I pay my rent? Can I afford my groceries? Do I have enough money to put gas in my car? Scott Herndon doesn't seem to address these questions. He talks mostly about bathrooms and flags. There are also significant differences between myself and Scott Herndon in matters of character. For example, Scott Herndon endangered the community celebration we cherish, called the Festival at Sandpoint, when he did a grandstanding stunt that cost Bonner County taxpayers over $300,000. He's never offered an apology to the taxpayers and has made no effort to reimburse the taxpayers for the ridiculous action. Number two, Scott Herndon repeatedly went to schools when they were in session and the farmers market and used a blowhorn to threaten people if they didn't believe exactly how he believed. During these offensive and disruptive incidents, he also had his children carry signs that traumatized many of the children who were there in attendance. Number three, Scott Herndon advocates for no exceptions to a female when she needs to terminate her pregnancy. He would have them be charged with murder, even if they were 14 and 15 years old. He would have them go to prison even after being traumatized. Someone with these dangerous ideologies should not be in the state legislature. I believe the state legislature needs to focus on reducing the day-to-day costs for Idaho citizens. My goal is to help fellow Idaho citizens with their everyday bills and their everyday dreams. Thank you.
Next up, we have Catherine Larson, an independent candidate for the District 1B House of Representatives seat.
Hello, I'm Catherine Larson, running for the House of Representatives seat 1A. Thanks to the B, to KRFY, to the reader, for putting on the forum. I was invited to introduce myself tonight, but rather than reciting my bio, let me stand to the side here. Well, I might knock this over. Rather than reciting my bio, I'd like to tell you why I'm running. I'm running because I love this place. I love the rugged independence where people do for themselves, but then they also go out and help their neighbor, regardless of political affiliation. I love the beauty in the wilderness that has shaped generations of hardworking, independent thinkers and builders. I love the generosity that has spawned seven times the national average of nonprofits in a town this size that fills the gaps and keeps our communities thriving. But I'm concerned. I received this in my mailbox, and you probably got one too, 24-page newspaper with big stamped boxed scores for each legislator, endorsements and sanctions sent to, I think, 25,000 Republicans in District 1. It was sent out by the Bonner County Central Committee. Herndon was front and center, one full page with A pluses, and also approved the budget. Sunshine Report shows that $55,000 was spent over the spring on literature. Now, I'm sure it wasn't all on this, but this was a big ticket item. Behind that mailer is something called the Idaho Freedom Index. It's a scorecard that claims to measure freedom. In fact, it measures something very different, and I'm going to tell three stories that illustrate it. First one, last session, Senator Jim Woodward and Representative Mark Souder wrote a bill to protect families in Bonner and Boundary counties from unjustified rate hikes by monopoly sewer companies. That's the same protection that we offer for water in Idaho as well. It easily passed the Senate, but it died in the House. And the reason is because the Freedom Index gave it a negative 6 score. And just to be clear, a negative 6 is a punishing score. Any representative who voted for this bill got dinged 6 points on their scorecard, and that scorecard is marketed as the measure of true conservatism in the state. So there's a lot of people who move in and think that that actually measures conservatism. Most bills are rated less than 3 points. So Republican senators could not afford to vote for this good bill that would have been good for rural North Idaho, rural Idaho in general. They couldn't do it. I believe Mark Souder voted for it because it was his constituents, but he took a 6-point ding. The Freedom Index made it too expensive, and this was the price. The bill was written by our neighbors to solve a real problem in our own backyard, and they got punished. Story two, same session, different bill, House Bill 601, how school districts deal with teachers' unions. Look at what it actually does, regardless of the merits. I'm not saying it was a good or a bad bill, but what the bill did was create a new chapter in Idaho Code, create new civil penalties. It directs the Attorney General to investigate complaints, translates to expensive litigation for us that we have to fund. And it treats firefighters one way and teachers another. By the Freedom Index's own standards and by all objective standards, this bill expands government, it increases regulation, and it treats people unequally. It should have had a score worse than that sewer bill, but instead it was rated a +3. Who wrote this bill? It reads a lot like bills that are being introduced in other states around the country by big money out-of-state PACs. Story three, Chuck Lohman, Army vet, substitute teacher, good man, never held elected office. They gave him an F in this newspaper. On what basis? They failed a veteran with no voting record with an F because he sounds like he won't comply. A bill written in our district is punished. The bill expanding the government, but following an agenda is rewarded, and a veteran who refuses to kiss the ring is stamped with a failing grade before his first, is it done? Okay, I'm running as an independent because I don't want to, I want to be able to vote for bills based on their merit and based on the people who are here. And so it's Independence Day in Idaho. I'll see you on the other side of the primary.
All right, and our last candidate, Karen Mattei, Idaho House 1A Democratic ticket.
Okay, thank you all for coming tonight, and thank you to our hosts for having this event and also for giving us uncontested folks a voice tonight. I really appreciate that. I'm Karen Mattei. I live in Sandpoint. I have a 28-year-old son who moved here last year with his family. Both he and his wife attend North Idaho Community College. He's in a trade program there while my daughter-in-law finishes her prereqs for a teaching degree. My granddaughter is just finishing second grade at Farman's Didwell. So, I've had the pleasure of seeing firsthand how great our public schools are here in North Idaho. At the same time, I know they could be even better if Idaho schools weren't the least funded in the country again. The need to fully fund them is just one of the reasons I'm running for House Seat 1A. I was a journalist for many years and then a communications director in the nonprofit sector for an organization that assisted landmine victims and then a humane society. And I like to think that experience is carried over to my campaign, allowing me to listen carefully to people on all sides of an issue. I did at my last campaign. I went to over 2,000 doors, unaffiliated and independent voters, to hear what they had to say. And the ability to lead, to hear people on all sides of an issue leads me to the need for balance in our state house. For the last 30 odd years, we've had a Republican supermajority, no secret, in the Idaho legislature. And I encourage everyone here tonight and who's listening to ask yourselves if we are better off for it. Is it easier for our working families to put food on the table? Can the majority of young families buy a first home? Can they afford health care and child care? I think we all know the answers to those questions. No, no, and a resounding no. In fact, these things are further out of reach than ever before, because our legislature is not dealing with the issues that concern the majority of Idahoans. Instead, GOP lawmakers are continuing the trend of passing big tax breaks for corporations and the wealthy, breaks that put our state in the hole to the tune of $250 million and forced across-the-board budget cuts this last session. Cuts, mind you, to programs and services that, again, benefit the majority of Idahoans. Like slashing funds for disability services and child care. So I would argue that the only way to restore balance, to change the conversation, is to elect Democrats and independents to the legislature. Because no matter what flavor of Republican you may be, there is pressure in Boise, we just heard Catherine say, to vote a certain way. Now I am running to change the conversation, to challenge the status quo, and to address real issues like increasing the homeowner's exemption for property tax relief, making first-time home ownership more affordable, and increasing taxes on the very wealthy so that money can go toward fixing our aging public schools, thereby taking the burden off of homeowners, which needs to be done. Now, Democrats are better for the economy of the working people. If you are satisfied with the cost of living, the conditions of our public schools, the conditions of our roads, keep voting for the majority party. If you want real change, consider voting for me and other Democrats and independents this November. Thank you all very much.
Thank you to all of our unopposed candidates. Next, we'll move on to the contested races, beginning with candidate introductions. First up are the candidates running for the 1A House seat. Remember, you have 2 minutes for your introductions. And first, we have Jane Souter.
Hello, my name is Jane Sauter, and I'm running for House Seat 1A, as the gentleman here said. I just want to say, though, before I begin, that I guess maybe the rules that he stated at the beginning don't really matter because everybody broke those rules right away. So just wanted to clarify that I'm going to keep the rules, but I just couldn't help but notice that. I'm a retired homeschool mom. I have 9 children. I have 21 grandchildren, and I live in Kokalala. I've been married to my husband almost 40 years. It'll be 40 years in August. He is retired presently, and we have owned small businesses for the majority of our married life. So I have business experience. I also have a lot of experience in the Republican Party. I've been doing things in the Republican Party since my oldest child was a baby, and that was 37 years ago. So I do have experience, but I also have the knowledge and the integrity to serve in Boise, and I would really like to represent you there. I'm trying to kind of draw on a blank here. I've got a lot of notes here, but I just want to say that I'm happy to be here. I'm happy that you're here, and that tells me that you want to be informed and you want to hear from all of us up here. And so I hope that by the end of this session that you will be able to make an informed decision on who you're going to vote for, because I really do believe that Idaho is at a crossroads and that who you choose in this primary is really pivotal. So it's going to matter for your finances, it's going to matter for your values, and it will matter for the future of our children and our grandchildren. So please choose carefully. Thank you.
All right. And next up, Mark Sauter.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for being here. I'm Mark Sauter. I'm your District 1 representative. I've been representing you for the last 4 years. I've spent all 4 of those years fighting for you, using our North Idaho conservative values to make good decisions and good votes and to bring good bills. I think these values actually make the North Idaho area the area that we all love. I've been a property owner here since 1993, family forester. I've lived here, been a homeowner since 2012, and I've volunteered here ever since. Actually done some time volunteering here at this high school. Over the last 4 years, I voted several times to reduce our property income tax, reduce property tax a few times, income tax, yes, reduce personal income taxes as well. And yes, I voted when the revenues came in low, I adjusted my votes and made that work as well. I believe the decisions in North Idaho need to stay in North Idaho and certainly need to stay out of the Boise area and for sure out of our Washington, D.C. area. I spent 40 years in the fire service and local government. That time gave me lots of experience to work with and respect local government. I think that for the most part, those decisions should be left there, the county and city level. I've run 18 bills and had them all signed by the governor. Each bill was a conservative solution to a real problem that was here. Well, thank you. Thanks. I'll vote for a district. That's my main thing. And it's on May 19th, it's an important date, and I'm asking for your vote, and I'll certainly talk to you some more again. Thank you.
Next, we'd like to invite candidates running for the 1B House seat to introduce themselves. And first, we'll hear from Chuck Lohman.
Good evening, and thank you. My name is Chuck Lohman. I am running for the Idaho House of Representatives seat 1B. Just to tell you a little bit about myself, community service and being a community servant runs deep in my family. My dad is an Eagle Scout. I'm an Eagle Scout. My firstborn son is an Eagle Scout, and my last son is in the scouting program right now. And what scouting taught me was to empower people at the lowest level to do things for themselves. When 9/11 happened, I asked, Lord, here I am. What do you want from me? And that was to be an Army chaplain. I served in combat operations for 39 months in Iraq and Afghanistan. I have three bad discs in my back to tell you the story about it. But I did that because I love my country and I love people. What I see now is there is a real threat to federalism happening in our state house. We're drawing power further up the chain when power should be pushed down to the lowest level. We need to be looking for tools and solutions for our county commissioners, for our sheriffs, for our school districts, allowing them to solve the problems at their levels, not take power away from them, not take money away from them, but give them the tools they need to solve problems at a local issue, at a local level. I learned that in the Army, that we're successful in the Army because the lowest private can achieve the mission. If his NCO goes down, he can still fight and achieve the mission. Top-down leadership doesn't work. It's bottom-up courage and tenacity to fight and make it through the problems together with the people next to them. That's why I'm here, and that's why I'm serving, and that's why I ask for your vote. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And before we have Cornell Razor give us his introduction, I would like to please ask that we remain as respectful as possible to each of the candidates. You can certainly show them what your personal opinion is by the way that you vote. I appreciate that very much. All right, Mr. Razor.
Thank you. Thank you for putting this on. Appreciate it. I appreciate all you folks taking the time to come out tonight. My name is Cornell Razor. Most of you probably know me. I grew up here. I'm married 49 years, and this thing is moving. I have three kids, 16 grandkids. I own a small business that originally was in Sandpoint and now is in Ponderay Army Surplus. My family and I kind of separately operate our own corner of a little farm out in Sagal, and we just had another calf born, so it's going to be an interesting summer. I read the bills. I go to Boise for you, and I hit the Capitol at about 5:30, and I leave between 4 and 6 in the evening, depending on the needs of the day. I think I probably read 400 bills this time. I think 800 and change were written, but only 400 seemed like they were going to be voted on, and we ended up having the governor sign into a legislation 350 or so bills. Takes a lot of time to do that, but that's what I do. That's what I do for you. I contact the principals that are involved in the bills if necessary. There was a bill on fishing game regarding trapping and cameras, and I was able to contact, interestingly enough, some people from the trapping industry, and I spent quite a bit of time figuring out how to get a hold of them, and then when I finally got hold of them, they said, "We're good either way on this bill." So that was an interesting exercise. But I do the very best I can to read the bills, to spend the time necessary to understand them, and to vote accordingly so that I advance the cause of liberty, freedom, liberty, and not attacking your pocketbook, and funding government for the essential functions that it's supposed to supply to Idaho citizens. And I'm running for May 19th. I'd appreciate your vote.
And to wrap up the introductions, next we will hear from the District 1 Idaho Senate seat candidates. And first up, we have Scott Herndon.
Good evening. My name is Scott Herndon. I thank some of the previous candidates who gave their introductions for repeating my name 22 times. So I really appreciate the name recognition. So now, I thought that the previous candidate was a farmer, but I learned tonight that he's a fiction novelist. So if you want to know the actual record that I'm running on, it's at herndonforidaho.com. And it includes things like fighting for gun rights here in Sandpoint with the passing Senate Bill 1374 and paying at my own expense to litigate that at the Idaho Supreme Court and costing taxpayers zero. It includes supporting public education by carrying the public education budget on the Senate floor in 2024 and succeeding at that $3.1 billion budget and increasing education funding while also supporting school choice, and that included a constitutional amendment that I hope to get passed eventually. We've introduced it 3 years in a row that would recognize parents' fundamental right to educate their children without government regulation. And I think we can succeed. We were only short by one vote this year. I'm proudest of our achievements on the finance and the budget front. I have a background previously to moving to Sandpoint 22 years ago with my wife, Arlene. I have a degree in finance and worked in Big 8 accounting and audit and worked for Charles Schwab and Toyota. And we passed and overrode the governor's veto for the first time in 16 years before I got there. And we passed House Bill 292, which delivered $317 million of ongoing property tax relief. And it's one of my goals to completely eliminate property taxes while maintaining local governmental control and funding. And I think we can do it by controlling our state spending at the state level. One of the things I committed to yesterday is running for the Senate. I'm running as a public service, and I'm going to be donating my $30,000 of salary and extra per diem that you make down in Boise to pay for housing. I'm going to be donating that to Bonner County and Boundary County charities if I'm elected. I would ask for your support on May 19th. Thank you.
All right. Jim Woodward.
Well, good evening. Thanks for coming out. As we started that, I had a little bit of a joke, but it's gotten tense enough. I'll probably skip that. I will tell you that with three people at 5 minutes each, five more at 2 minutes each, 25 minutes there, that's a long time to ask a politician to not say anything. My name's Jim Woodward. I'm asking to serve again as your state senator. In my sixth year right now serving as your state senator. I think I've shared with you before. I grew up in the area. Graduated from Bonner's Ferry High School, went to the University of Idaho, got a degree in mechanical engineering, served in the Navy, both on active service in the nuclear submarine force and then some other parts of the Navy for a total of 21 years. I own a construction company here in the Sandpoint area, so employ some folks and understand how to keep the value of the checkbook. Why am I running? It really comes down to being vested in the community. I'm standing in a building that I helped build as I went to school as a student at the University of Idaho. My wife is here. She comes in the audience this evening. She comes here every day and teaches forestry and science, part of the farmers market. I'm out in the community all the time. I donate all the time to the community. If you talk to folks at Bonner Homeless Transitions or PAFE or the Better Together Animal Alliance, you'll see that we're always out there. Remember that at War Memorial Field, when we went to build a new War Memorial Field, that the old one came down with no cost to the taxpayer. And I will say that defense attorneys also cost money. I spend a lot of time correcting the record. If you look out in the lobby this evening, we have a couple of big poster boards out there to provide the truth in some of the claims, because 10% doesn't make the truth. There was also one of those is voting with the Dems. That's on another poster board. The numbers are out there and they speak for themselves. I appreciate you coming here. Thank you this evening. We'll look forward to answering more questions.
All right, it's time to shift gears. So let's get straight into the questions, with the first being for House 1A candidates. Idaho has enacted millions in tax cuts since 2017. Do you believe that the state has gone too far or not far enough? And how would you balance tax relief with funding for roads, schools, and wildfire response? First up to answer that question will be Mark Sauter.
Thanks for the question. I think it's a mixed answer. It's more nuanced than just a matter of are we at the right point or not. We made some pretty heavy duty tax cuts last year. I think they would have been livable, although we had also a big federal tax cut. The big beautiful bill kicked in and probably cost us about $150 million this year and about estimated $150 million next year. So we did have to do some trimming, for sure. I think the jury's out as far as our numbers for this year, in that we still haven't finished the year out. I know a number of our businesses, corporate-wise, took some heavy-duty tax cuts of their own because they assumed the state would adopt all of the Big Beautiful Bill from day one. The state did not do that. So we are slowly but surely reeling in the dollars that should work for our system. So I think it's going to work out okay. We made some pretty good cuts this year. We're living on about a flat budget. I think we're going to grow out of it. I think next year we should be a lot better. But certainly we have to mind our numbers. And we also are going to have to watch our income and our revenues. But I think we're going to grow out of the system. And I think we're going to learn a good lesson. We need to watch our tax cuts very closely and also watch what's on the federal horizon as well, so we stay in compliance with our requirements for our own budgeting and our own responsibilities here, like fire and education. But it's going to take that. It's just going to take some good monitoring to make sure we make it. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Jane Souter.
Well, I think that our state budget has grown 60% in the last 6 years. So I do definitely think that we could trim the budget without cutting services if we trim wisely. I think we could have better oversight in the committees, in the legislative committees, if they would have better oversight, if they would do away with unnecessary programs, possibly programs that were started during the COVID era and can no longer be sustained. Some things carried over and just keep on being funded. Well, if they're not effective, then they should probably be just nixed. And then there's the DOGE committee. I don't know if you're all familiar with that, but there was the DOGE committee in Idaho, and they made recommendations. And one of their recommendations, for an example, was that they wanted to bring before the committee that there was a commission on Hispanic affairs. And that was costing, I believe, a little over $500,000 a year. So you would think that something like that could be trimmed. And it didn't pass the legislature. So there you can see where it's important who's in the legislature, because that's who's going to make those decisions on trimming the budget. So there's things that can be done, and I think that you're going to want legislators in those positions who are not big spenders, who are not special interest people, who are going to see the necessity of trimming the budget, because anything federal that we add, and we do have a large chunk of our budget covered by federal money, we all know that's fiat money. That is money that is being added like bricks on top of our children and grandchildren. So I do believe we could do better and tighten it up. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Next. Next, we'll hear from House 1B candidates from the same question, but I will repeat the question one more time. Idaho has enacted millions in tax cuts since 2017. Do you believe that the state has gone too far or not far enough? How would you balance tax relief with funding for roads, schools, and wildfire response? And first up, we'll have Cornell Razor.
So since 2016 to 2026, the tax rate, the income tax rate, has gone from 7.4% to 5.3%. The budget, the general fund receipts from that income tax have gone from $1.6 billion at 7.4% up to $2.7 billion at 5.3%. And the reason for that is a well-understood concept that when you leave money in the hands of people who are providing jobs, infrastructure, housing, and those kinds of things, they will invest it back into that to create more profit for themselves, more infrastructure, more jobs, more housing. And so Idaho is well on the way with DOGE that was talked about earlier, and with simple investigation into the budget itself. We have hundreds of FTEs that are funded with nobody in those positions. An FTE is a full-time employee, and That is a source of revenue that can be used ongoing to fund some of the things that need to be funded, whether it be education, infrastructure, police and law enforcement, the judicial. So I think we can do more. I believe we can do more. I know all of us individually have to do more. I just had my budget cut by somebody else, and everyone has had that happen to themselves once or more in their lives. And what you do is you retreat. You retreat in, you cut unnecessary things, and you spend only what is necessary to spend. Idaho is required by law, by the Constitution, to provide money for education. And just really quickly, I'm going to probably run out of time, but we're up to $2.75 billion provided out of the general fund for education, and we were up in 2026, $100 million over 2025. So we are funding our responsibilities.
Mr. Chuck Lohman.
So to answer that question, let me talk a little bit about the black box theory. So the black box theory is that when we look at a complex system, sometimes we assume that it's less complex than it actually is. And what I mean by that is, if we just go willy-nilly cutting things off, sometimes you can trim the fat, and I maybe have a little fat I need to trim. But if we start cutting off fingers, your hand may still work, but not as good as it once did. If you start plucking out eyes, you can still see, but not the way you're designed to. Start taking out organs, the system falls apart. So we need to be careful that as we talk about tax cuts and cutting programs, that we don't cut too deep. One of the propositions is to remove property tax and then move all of that money to the state to then push it back down to our counties. That means our county will be asking our state government for what it needs. You won't be asking the state government for what we need. Your county does. Right now we have a tax system where our county can raise money based on what your county representatives see are the needs that you see are important. And they can solve your local problems with local money. I agree, property taxes are a burden. I have an 80-year-old neighbor that can't get homeowners insurance because our fire districts went from a 10 to a 4. She can't afford the replacement insurance, and it's about 4 times more than what the property tax increase would have been. That's not conservatism. That hurts our community. I would offer a local option sales tax or a blended sales tax where we have a property tax amount coupled with a 0.25% sales tax that pays down that. On good years, it pays it off. On bad years, we still get the money we need to solve problems. Thank you.
All right. Next up, same question for the District 1 Senate candidates. Would you like me to repeat the question? First up will be, Jim Woodward.
Thanks. I don't need that repeated. Okay. I appreciate it. So you've heard that we did reduce taxes significantly in the last 8 years, 7.4% income tax rate down to a 5.3% flat rate. And I supported many of those. In fact, I supported three income tax cuts, three rebates, in addition, a homeowner's exemption increase, as well as property tax relief. But when I went into that last one that we've heard about here during this campaign, I voted no on an income tax cut when many Republicans voted for it. I had been warning, in fact, 3 years earlier that I thought we were getting to the balance point, because the balance point in our ability to take care of those basic services that we rely on from state government, and that includes public safety, education, and transportation. And when I talk about public safety, I'm saying our law enforcement, our wildfire fighting capabilities. We saw exactly that happen. With this last income tax rate reduction down to 5.3%, we took away our ability to maintain those basic public services. The reduction in revenue from the state was approximately $250 million, and this year, to balance the budget as we were required to do, we took $250 million out of the transportation budget. Anybody that drives Highway 95 on a daily basis understands that it's not in a great shape for holding the amount of traffic in today's world or today's Idaho. We also had to play games a little bit with the fire budget, and we will have a fire season again just like we do every year, and many people are nervous about it because we had a dry winter, and we don't have that money preloaded to pay for the fires that are coming up this year. We'll be paying that on a credit card next year. So I want to tell you that I've never voted for raising taxes. I voted for multiple tax reductions, but I still believe we have to take care of those basic services.
All right, same question, Scott Herndon.
Okay, so I think what we do at the state level, we've actually increased the budget this year, so state spending grew by 2.5%. So even though we passed a significant tax cut last year, I think it was the right move for Idahoans because Idahoans are facing significant affordability problems. And we need to help regular Idahoans pay their bills. And I think that's one of the things we can do in government. The real question is, how much do we want government to do overall? That's the real question. Because back when America was founded in 1776 and we declared our independence, the tax burden on Americans at that time was 1.5% in the colonies and it was 5% in Britain. And today, the average American on a $70,000 salary is paying $20,000 in taxes. So you're looking at 25 to 35% overall. That's between your property taxes, payroll taxes, income taxes, sales taxes, Medicare, Social Security, and all of that. And the reality is it depends on how much freedom you want. So if you want government doing more and government doesn't have competition, so government tends to do things inefficiently, then we're gonna ask government to do more and we're gonna spend half of our year working to pay for government. And then we can have the best of everything is what the idea is gonna be. But the reality is we don't always get the best of everything when we pay for it using government. So you take the Affordable Care Act. One of the biggest budget concerns in Idaho actually has to do with healthcare. The biggest budget item is Medicaid. And Medicaid at the federal level is a federal mandate, but we do spend Idaho state taxpayer money that you pay federally and at the state level to fund Medicaid. Medicaid expansion is way more expensive than we were told it was going to be. After the Affordable Care Act, healthcare got a lot more expensive. So the reality is we're going to have to decide what we want government to pay for. We're going to have to decide how much of our time we want to give away each year to fund it in government, or we're going to have to decide whether we want free markets. I prefer free markets and lower taxes. Thank you.
Okay. Moving on to the second question we have prepared for our candidates this evening. The question is, should the Idaho State Legislature revisit how it funds public schools? If yes, why? If not, why not? First up, we'll have our House 1B candidates, and to lead us off will be Cornell Razor.
So, the funding mechanism is an arcane formula that involves alchemy and secret arts. And I think that thing needs to be revamped. I haven't actually had an opportunity to spend much time looking at how the funding mechanism works. I've been warned off of it a couple times. But we need to revisit how the things are, how that particular formula is come to, how it is decided upon. Secondly, one of the big issues that I see is a lot of the money that was designed to go to rural schools ends up in Boise, because when you look at Washington, D.C. definitions of rural, Boise is rural. Now, I don't want necessarily a raise of hands, but I doubt that very many of you in here think that the city of Boise is a rural area. And so what ends up happening is true rural schools like Boundary County, East Bonner County, West Bonner County, they end up with a reduction in funds because it's spread to schools that truly aren't rural. So that also needs to be revisited. I'm not on the health on the education committee, but I do know people on it. And should I get reelected, I'm going to be one of the things I want to do is I want to learn how that funding mechanism works and how it figures into the distribution of funding to rural schools that seems to be so inordinate to me. That's one aspect of it. Secondly, we need to continue to do just what we did this last year. The education committee did. I believe they did a very good job. of fielding bills, funding bills, and so did JFAC, that we ended up funding education to the tune of $2.75 billion from the general fund. That's up 74% from 2016. So it's not like we're not addressing education funding. There just has to be some revamping. Did you show me it to shut up? Okay. I can't hardly see you out there. So now you did. Okay, well.
Thanks.
That was a pre-shut up.
All right, Mr. Lohman.
I do spend a lot of time in our public schools and spend a lot of time getting to know our trustees and the struggles that they go through. One example, so we talk about how education funding has increased, but it's done through some backdoors methods, like House Bill 521, which was the $50 million that was generated to help refurbish aging schools in our school districts around the state. $30 million of that was monies that were already dedicated to our schools and went into their general fund to pay for things like buses and teacher salaries and different things. And so they found $20 million from somewhere else, but it was a net loss to our schools. And in our own school district, they're not hiring new employees. They're allowing attrition to happen. And as teachers retire, they don't fill those new positions because inflation is a real thing. What our value was 12 years ago or 10 years, 5 years ago now, when they passed the permanent levy, that money isn't worth the same as it was then. We do need to revisit the funding mechanism because our rural schools travel hundreds and thousands of miles to bus kids to school. Schools in Boise travel maybe 3 or 4 miles to bus their kids to their schools. It doesn't work as well up here. We need to account for the specific difficulties that public schools in rural areas face. Thank you.
Next, we'll hear from the District 1 Senate candidates. And to start us off, Jim Woodward.
Thank you. We do need to get to address the funding formula. I serve on the Senate Education Committee. I have for 6 years now. And we are actually working on it. This legislative session, we spent a number of lunch hours with a small group and the Superintendent of Public Instruction making that plan for what will happen this summer and then into the next legislative session. Why do we need to rewrite the funding formula? Well, one, property taxes. Right now, we still have this system where we're not fully funding from the state. If we can get that taken care of at the state level, then we can take some of that burden off that property tax system and help all of us, the homeowners, out. Two, to benefit the performance of the system, we look at what we're looking at doing is a system where the money follows the child instead of this arcane notion, which I will note that the arcane system is from 1994, so I think probably most of us are arcane. So we have been working on this for nearly a decade now, and anytime we go into something that is such a large portion of the budget, it deals with our children. There is some contention around it, so we've been making efforts for a number of years now. Last year, working with our State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Debbie Critchfield, I sponsored a bill. It was a partial rewrite, a pilot program to try and move us toward that newer system of money following the child. It was the first piece of legislation that has passed either body in the entire 9 or 10 year effort. So I am working for you and working on that system. We're going to try and make those improvements.
Mr. Herndon.
So I'd want to see several things that we do different on how we fund public education in the state. Number one, what's interesting about public education is on average we fund 79% of public education with state funding, not with local property taxes, which actually goes to prove that you can fund it from the state and retain local control with local school boards and local school districts. So just think about that. That proves the point. What I'd like to see is that 100% of public education funding be funded by the state legislature. That is what the Constitution basically demands, even in its most simplistic terms in Article 9. So I'd like to see that done. One of the things I would prefer on the funding formula is right now it's attendance-based, and I would prefer it was enrollment-based because the schools incur the cost whether the kids are there or not. I understand the argument for attendance-based. We moved to enrollment-based during COVID. I think it worked better for the schools, allows them to do their budgets a lot easier. The other thing I would prefer to see is that money get in the hands of teachers more than it gets into the hands of administrators. So what we've seen is we've seen the growth of the administrative class. And so that's why in 2023 and 2024, I carried a teacher spending account bill, which was designed to reimburse teachers for the expenses they incur in their classroom every year. It was going to be worth $800 to $1,000 per teacher for little stuff that they spend to stock their classroom. We passed it in the Senate 34-0. The second year we modified to take care of some of the concerns that were over in the House, but we couldn't get it out of the House. I would go back and try to finish that bill. I also like the idea of education's choice, school choice programs. And the reason is the goal in the Constitution is that we educate every kid in the state of Idaho. And with all the options that are available today, public education is not working for every kid, which is why every kid is not as proficient in reading and math as they ought to be. That's why we have, in some school districts, average proficiency of under 40% in reading and math. And so we want to support every kid's education, which requires us to support other alternatives that are our school choice options. Thank you.
All right, now we'll hear from the House 1A candidates, starting with Mark Sutter.
Yes, the formula needs to be rewritten. I had 1995 as the shelf life of it, but what hasn't been said is it's also based on classroom units. And when you do that, classroom of 20 kids or classroom of 15 kids or classroom of 30 kids, changes how districts are funded, and it makes it really difficult for them to balance all their budgets. Plus, they don't really know how many children they're going to get every September. So that's a tough thing to do. We certainly need to redo it. It should be based on students. Attendance should count. Without it, there's little incentive to show up like I think we all want them to be, and all want them to be personally responsible. Same with their parents. But we also need to include facilities, transportation, money for special ed costs have skyrocketed, and we've not kept our student funding formula up with our special ed programs. And last on that list, at least, is innovation. This year we passed a bill that encourages school districts that do well to reduce the number of hours they need to spend on reporting so they can get rid of some of the state reports and just manage their time on the federal reports. That encourages them to have higher achievements for their kids, and also saves them time and all of us some tax money. So yes, we need to redo the formula, but it needs to be comprehensive on how it looks at all the issues of a school district. Last year we passed a bill to help with transportation costs. This year we passed a bill to help with special ed costs. Every bite of that elephant helps, and I will keep doing it. Thank you.
Okay, and Jane Sauter.
Well, I think a lot of the things that happened during COVID, or the educational system and what happened to it during COVID, I should say, have changed a lot of the ways that education has happened, even up here in District 1. So I think we need to revisit like the shift that happened then to now, and we need to support any program that had a demonstrable success during that time. So I think it should be funded equally along with all other education delivery systems. So whether that's charter school or private school or homeschool or little pod schools or co-ops, I really think that there's so many more students in those kinds of education systems than are in the public system. And I think they should all be funded and all be looked at as a viable option. They aren't there. Those other kinds of schools are not just there because parents don't want their kids to succeed. They're there because they saw the public system as failing them, and they moved into that area of education. And I was publicly educated myself through the 11th grade, so I have a lot of experience in the public system. However, I didn't publicly educate my children. I homeschooled and then moved them to Christian school and co-ops, lots of different things we did with 9 children over the course of their education. I'm just saying that there's products out there. I think the competition is good. I appreciate the teachers. I appreciate the administration of these schools. But we do have to trim those things and make them more efficient. Another thing, was that 15 seconds? Okay, another thing is I think we could get rid of the launch program, and that would be $80 million that we could put towards the K-12. Thank you.
Thank you, candidates. For our third question, how do you feel about Idaho keeping public and federal lands? Do you feel the state should keep them, protect them, and preserve the public lands for Idahoans? Or do you think that we should make federal lands available for private sale? First up, we will hear from our Senate candidates, and to lead us off will be Scott Herndon.
So the Arns are in the audience tonight, and I really appreciate the fight that they did for years on Camp A Road abandonment. And they were literally model citizens on what we should do in the county. There they are. And they're model citizens on what we should do in the county when we feel like there's an injustice. And that one was access to Lake Ponderay. They're on Camp A Road, and the county abandoned Camp A Road and abandoned all of our access to Lake Ponderay. So when I was in the Senate, I sponsored a bill, and Cornell sponsored it the next year, and we got it through the Senate the year I was there, 33-2. Senate Bill 1258 in 2024 that would guarantee your access to public lands and public waters. My goal would be to preserve that access. My goal would be to preserve recreational use of our federal public lands. That's what we're seeing a lot of restrictions on right now. Hunters and other users that are recreationists go up onto public land and they find a gate closed all of a sudden after years, and we don't want that to happen here. And so I want to see that eliminated. There was a bill last year, Senate Bill 1086, that would have created a new Idaho crime that even if the federal, that applied to the federal government, if they put up a notice on a website that there was a restriction, that you would be charged with the new Idaho crime, and Senator Woodward supported that bill. It barely passed the Senate and fortunately did not advance in the House, and that's the kind of stuff we need to be on the watch for. The other thing I would prefer to see is that there's better management of our federal forests. So the federal government, we all know, has not done a good job at wildfire mitigation beforehand. We also have a lot of resources that are languishing and going to waste on federal forest land, and that creates the wildfire risk. And so I think the partnership that Idaho can have between IDL and the federal government is the way to go, that we want to manage those timber resources on federal land so that we reduce wildfire risk. It's a treasure that we all have in Idaho to have this public land. I don't think after 50 years, 100 years, 250 years, that the right solution is to give that away. I think we work with what we have and keep our access. Thank you.
Jim Woodward.
Well, if you're in Idaho and you enjoy your public lands, I spent some time yesterday and got out above, looking out over Lake Ponderay from up on top of the ridgeline. For many of us, that is why we are here. You just heard from my opponent, we're going to keep those, and yet a couple of years ago he was ready to sell them. That's out there in the record. He campaigned openly on selling public lands. That's a distinction between myself and him. I'm not sure what the next comes next, how he'll adapt to the next audience, but maybe. I did vote yes in support of a bill that said that if you're trespassing, you are actually trespassing, whether you're on public ground or private land that's closed. If you're there without authority, that's called trespass. That means that choices have consequences. That's how we live in Idaho. We also passed a bill that said that government can't come on to your property because there have been other issues with government on large private tracts of ground coming on to enforce laws, but without a warrant. And so we saw both sides of that coin and voted in support of both those. We are fortunate here in Idaho right now that we have so many great Idahoans now serving at the federal level. One of those is the chief of the Forest Service, Tom Schultz, who used to run the Idaho Department of Lands. And so we have this opportunity right now with that relationship between and Tom's knowledge of Idaho, along with some other people there, because we also have an Idahoan as the undersecretary of the Department of Ag. We have this opportunity to make some changes in how we manage those federal lands. I think you're going to see that coming. In fact, where IDL gets on a fire immediately, that's been the policy for some time. That was, and now the Forest Service, you're going to see this year, will do that same thing, because Tom Schultz has said that is the policy. We're not going to let it burn and see how it goes. So there are improvements coming from the Forest Service.
Okay. Next up, House 1A candidates, and to lead will be Chuck Bowman.
1A or 1B?
I'm sorry, 1B.
2B. So one of the things that we need to look at in managing our federal lands better, so I am firmly against selling our public lands. If we sold our public lands, you and I would never see them. Bill Gates will buy them up and make us eat fake meat. So what I do like is like what Boundary County has done, and they've leveraged the Good Neighbor Authority to come up with a forest management plan to reduce fire risk in their county. That's one step to do it. The other thing that we need to do is lean on our federal partners on reworking the NEPA processes, National Environmental Protection Act. It's being used in ways that it was never intended to be used. You can sue the federal government, get paid to sue the federal government, start up an NGO to sue the federal government and get paid to do it to stop the Forest Service from doing their job. So we need to renegotiate NEPA and NEPA processes to ensure that we protect the Forest Service in doing what we ask it to do, which is manage our lands. That's all I got to say. It's that simple. So,
Mr. Razor.
So I'm not going to be able to squeeze my public lands presentation of an hour and 45 minutes into 2 minutes. But I've been presenting on this for decades. Bonner County currently has 445,000 acres of land that is under federal control. It's mismanaged. Some of it could actually be used. Now, I'm not talking about selling it. I'm talking about the state taking control of it and managing it properly. Right now, the federal government pays through welfare payments called PILT, Payment in Lieu of Taxes, and SRS, Secure Rural Schools funds, about $1.5 million a year. That's just, that's about two bucks, not even $2 an acre for leaving that land alone. And I think we could manage it better, and we could actually have a return on it. The states that have managed their own endowment lands for generations have shown that they make approximately $5 for every dollar invested. The federal government loses 73 cents for every dollar it invests on land that it manages or mismanages. So if Idaho took over the management, that slow but sure, it was divested of the federal government's control and into our hands through whatever means. The Good Neighbor Authority has some success. I tried as a county commissioner to get 200,000 acres somewhere in Idaho, anywhere in Idaho. We asked the Fed at that time, let us manage that. Give us 5 years. We'll come back and we can compare what's going on. They wouldn't do it. We have a better administration. I'm sorry I'm talking with an auctioneer's voice, but there's a lot here. We have a better administration this time. As already been pointed out, we have better individuals that control those administration, those agencies, so we have an option that maybe the Good Neighbor Authority might work. But eventually what needs to happen is the 63% of Idaho that's currently under federal mismanagement needs to be continue to be available as public lands to you, to the citizens of Idaho, but under the control of the state.
Okay, from 1A, Jane Souter.
Well, Cornell said the 63%, so you've got that in your head. But that means that we're living on the other 37%. So what happens when you've got a bigger demand and a smaller supply? Obviously, prices go up, right? So if we restrict supply, then the prices are up, and they're up right now, okay? So I'm not all about, like, selling off public land, but
A, yes, the federal government is mismanaging it. Just take a drive to Priest Lake and back and you'll see that. But also, if we could somehow get away, and I don't know the right terminology, so, but point being is that public lands in public hands, yes, I'm all about that. But if it's going to cause a strain on the people who are sitting on the other 37%, I say it's time to expand. We don't have to expand housing giant developments. We don't have to look like Rathdrum or Athol or anything like that. But I really think that if we don't free up some area, we look at the states that are on the eastern half of the United States. When they were formed, they were given the majority of their land. We are sitting on a fraction. Nevada's even way worse. So I'm saying it's not fair and that they need to give us back our control and they need to let the state decide what to do with that land.
And Mark Sauter.
I support keeping our public lands, hands down. No question, full stop. The Good Neighbor Authority is a great example of what can happen with state and federal work. Clearly, Boundary County is actually ahead of the game across the state. They've already started their agreements with the federal government. That'll put Boundary County in a landowner position. We can adopt the same thing. We'll let Boundary County be on the bleeding edge of this, and we can be on the acceptable or the benefit end of this. Right now, IDL does a much better job of managing our ground and also putting out fires. Last year, we passed a bill, and they do immediate fire attack, even if it's on federal ground or anybody else's ground. They don't wait. So that's made a big difference. Their average area of a fire start is much smaller this last year than it was in years past. So that makes a big difference. So these Boundary County, what's the agreements mean? It means the federal government will have the NEPA process. They still own that. That can always be worked on again. And they'll have the responsibility for fire extinguishment, meaning the money part, not the actual fire part. We'll have IDL that'll do the work on that with the feds and make sure our interests are covered. But it'll also, this land ownership for the county, it won't be physically, but they can get the benefit from all the timber sales. They can get the benefit from all the wildlife that's there, and the state will help with the wildlife management, not the federal government. So we should get the Endangered Species Act out of our state and move that to where it's in our fish and game so we can get grizzly bears and wolf issues at our state control. So, and thank you.
Thank you. All right, question from the audience. Recently, there has been a lot of coverage regarding the Freedom Foundation's scores, AKA the report card. If the Idaho Freedom Foundation's agenda and scoring criteria doesn't necessarily align with the majority of your constituency, how can you assure the voters that you will cast your vote in the best interest of those who voted for you? First up, we will hear from our House 1B candidates. And Cornell, you're going to lead us off.
I vote according to what the bill says, what the bullet list I get from investigating it says, from the questions I ask of the principals that are involved with it, from the cities, from individuals that have a vested interest in the particular bill at the time. What ends up happening is if a person has the same kind of worldview as somebody who is scoring a particular group of bills, then they look like they have consistency. And that isn't, I don't vote based on the Freedom Foundation's list. I vote based on what the bill says. And if it comes out according to their plus column, fine. If it comes out in their minus column, fine. I think you'll notice I don't have 100%. So, you know, it seems to me like if I was following some sort of code or some sort of list that I would have 100%. I don't have 100% because I think they're often wrong. So I also don't score 100% on IACI. I also don't score 100% on, there's about 8 or 9 different rating systems that we see at the central, at the state all the time, whether it's Farm Bureau or Big Ag or Big Dairy or IACI, Idaho Association. Help the old guy. Commerce and Industry. Thanks, Jim. So they have their own rating system as well, and I don't follow that either. I read the bills. I understand what the bills say. I investigate them, and then I vote according to what the Constitution says, some principles of small government, and what my constituents want.
Mr. Lohman.
So a couple of thoughts. One is, anyone who rates scores can choose which bills they want to rate and make anyone look like anything they want them to make. People are concerned about voting machines and discrepancies with voting machines, but I'll argue that voting scores by these organizations have more power over voters than discrepancies in voting machines. What I will tell you this is, when I look at bills, I'm going to look at, is it constitutional? And I hold that to a high regard. There are some bills that have been pushed that erode our constitutional freedoms and constitutional protections. It may not violate the letter of the Constitution, but it's death by a thousand cuts. And pretty soon we're going to be in a place where we wonder how we got here. Secondly, is it good for my constituents? Is it good for Bonner and Boundary County? Thirdly, does it violate my conscience? Ultimately, I'm going to stand in judgment for my words and my actions and my deeds. The Republican Party isn't going to do that. The IFF isn't going to do that. I will. And so I hold that in high regard. Lastly, I'm going to ask this question. Can this be done at a lower form of government? If it can be done at a lower form of government, then it is not my job to make the state do that. It's my job to find the tools and the resources and the personnel that the county or the sheriff's office or the school district needs to make that mission happen. That's how I'm going to vote. I'm going to keep a spreadsheet, and I'm going to keep it public for people to view so they know how I vote. Thank you.
And back to 1A, Mark Souter.
Simply said, I vote for our district. Of the 18 bills that I've had signed by the governor, I think most of them had a negative score. I bring bills for fire districts, for elections, for EMS, for county purchasing, for fire insurance for all of you. If the Freedom Foundation scores them negatively, I take the hit. If it'll help our district, I think that's what's important. Ultimately, it's all of you that are going to give me my scorecard on May 19th. I have some posters out in the lobby that'll show you how I vote is in correlation to the majority of our conservative elected officials. Feel free to go out there and take a look. I think the important thing to do is take the tough votes. I don't read the Freedom Foundation website and try and have it influence my scores. I don't read any of that stuff. I read the bill, and then I talk a lot to home, whether it's calling our local sheriff or our school districts or our county officials. I think that's what really matters, and that's what you send me to Boise to do. So that said, I think it's up to you guys to give me a scorecard, and I'll know that on May 19th, late. Thank you.
Jane Sutter.
Well, I just want to say I've never been scored by all these different organizations, so I have no idea what that feels like, but I'm sure it is intimidating for the legislators to be scored by all these different organizations. That said, I'm not going to belabor scores as much as I do want to encourage you to pick up one of my flyers out on my table And this is not to decimate the incumbent. This is just to show you the votes. So if you want to know how Cornell voted as opposed to how Mark voted, that's on this sheet. And I think it would behoove all of you to read this and to understand exactly, you know, sometimes I get the feeling as just an average voter that politicians think that you will forget really quickly how they voted or what you heard on the news. But if you can go back and you can look at their votes and you can say, well, why did you vote this way on this? And get the answers that you want. So this will help you. I also, if you need to know if it passed, I have that on my little sheet here, whether it passed the House or not, or whether it stalled in the Senate. But I think it's up to you to inform yourselves how your legislators voted. And I do also want to say that I don't like the idea of lobbyists in the Capitol. And that is one thing that I have heard from conservative legislators. They're distracting, and they're basically trying to coerce you to their viewpoint. And I think that's wrong. I don't know why. I haven't researched enough to know why they have that kind of access. But I would really like to see a time when your legislators can just get to work and not have all those distractions and temptations, and there's money and there's meals and there's all this stuff. I've only heard about this. I've never actually experienced it. But I would like to see a time when we can move them out of the way. Thank you.
Thank you. District 1 Senate, Jim Woodward.
Well, I fall in the same group as what we heard someone else. I failed both on the Freedom Foundation score and I failed on Idaho Association of Commerce and Industry, but I don't know what either of those scores were because I don't look at those scores. I'm voting for Bonner and Boundary County. I'm voting for you. And we are predominantly Republican, and you've probably heard some claims that I'm voting with the other party, but I, as I said, we have that billboard out there that really shows how I'm voting, that I'm voting with the majority of Republicans. In fact, I'm voting with the Republican majority 94% of the time as compared to my opponent in his 2 years in the Senate voted about 70% of the time with the Republican majority. That Idaho Freedom Foundation, that is just one example that of the out-of-state money coming into Idaho politics. We have a smaller population here. As some of the billionaires from the East Coast and other groups try to have an influence in national politics, they'd like to tick off Idaho as having passed their policy in the state. We see that money coming in all the time, whether it's Freedom Foundation, Citizens Alliance of Idaho, the Freedom Caucus. We have the Freedom Caucus Network, Freedom States. I can't keep track of them. All I do know is that my opponent used to be chair of one of those. He's chair of the Central Committee here right now. Although he didn't register as a Republican in Idaho until he'd been here for 13, 14 years, and he decided he was going to run as a Republican. I think that's really the point to make here, is that who holds the Republican values that we've known here in Idaho for so long, and what has brought Idaho to this place that so many people want to come and enjoy Idaho. I've been registered as a Republican here since 2000 when I came back out of the Navy from my active duty time. I was registered in Boundary County prior to that. I just don't think the way that some of these things that are going on, I just don't think that way. I'll continue to be honest and tell you what the truth.
Mr. Herndon.
A lot of labels, a lot of organizations, here, let me ask you this question. When you take an oath to serve as a legislator, are you taking an oath to the Republican Party? Nope. Are you taking an oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States and the state of Idaho? And that is the answer. And so when you vote, that's what you're voting on. You're looking at your principles. That's the first thing that you vote on. Everybody's got a set of principles and a worldview that they view the world through. Do I think government should be limited? Civil government? I do. Do I think they should spend 50% of our money? I don't think so. And then, is it constitutional? So here's what actually happens down at the Idaho Capitol. You have a paid lobbyist group. They're called legislative advisors. So when you get there, you get this green book with all the legislative advisors. And they are the corporations and the groups that pay lobbyists to convince your legislators to vote a certain way. And they have the biggest influence, more than you have, down at the Capitol. So one year I was in the Senate, and the Bayer lobbyists had five people there trying to get one of their bills passed because they wanted unlimited immunity based on the label on Roundup to never be sued in an Idaho court. And they had five people trying to get that bill passed, paid for by Bayer, which is a German corporation. So this is why you have out-of-state corporate money coming to candidates like Jim Woodward in over $10,000 to $20,000. And that's what influences legislators, is these corporate lobbyists. And the ISA, the Idaho Sheriff's Association, the Fraternal Order of Police, they all have an opinion. Food producers all have an opinion. But here's my favorite story. There was a bill, House Bill 25 in 2023, that made it all the way through the House. We called it a hostage bill. They held it all the way until the last day. And it was a one-page bill. That's what most of the bills are. I read it, and I realized that it violated a provision of the Constitution. I stood up on the Senate floor. It was supported in the House by one of our best conservative House representatives, Joe Palmer, and we ended up sending it to the amending order to fix it because it would have harmed all of you because it was unconstitutional. And that's the way you vote, and then you get things changed on the Senate floor, and you get good laws passed that follow the Constitution.
Thank you. Next question. While you were running for state office, where do you stand on local control? Local control, including things like flags, short-term rental regulations, speed limits, bike lanes, etc. And first up, we will have House 1B, Chuck Lohman.
Darn it, I didn't get a few moments to write down all my points, so here we go. I think I've made it pretty clear to this point, I'm all for local control and pushing authority to the lowest practical level possible. Right now, there's a bill that passed that would not allow cities to regulate the number of short-term rentals in their communities. That hurts communities like ours, where housing prices are out of reach of working class people. It's going to hurt workers if we can't allow local cities to figure out how to solve local problems for their local people. So we had local control. Darn it. Now my brain is shot. The other piece is, well, I've already made all those points. Local control, House bill, or okay. My passion about this is when we keep moving money and problems up to the state level, we can't solve them ourselves. We keep putting them out of reach of local Idahoans and put them in the reach of, just as Scott Herndon said, lobbyists who have more access. If we can keep it local, we can keep problems solved on a local level. Thank you.
Next up, Mr. Razor.
The state of Idaho is a Dillon's Law state. And the state, as such, has a vested interest in taking care of its individual citizens as greatly and as much as possible. And it's one of the few states, well, I can't say that, I haven't been in other states, but I'm guessing that the access that the average citizen has to their legislator in Idaho is probably better than most places. I get lots of calls about local issues. If it's something the state can help with, then I do what I can at the state level. And I have had two calls today, one today and one yesterday, that requested me to do something that was a county issue. And so I explained to them the county code, Title 12, Title 11. I didn't go through the whole thing, fortunately for them, and explained to them that those particular things are county adjudicated, and you do not want the state sticking their nose into that. You need to work with your county commissioners and your, in this particular case, the assessor. So as long as the state is careful about making sure that statutes devolve whatever is necessary down to the local level, that's where I gravitate. But when a series of issues come up all over the state from different citizens who contact you, and you get hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of emails about the same basic issue, you have to look into it. And so House Bill 583, oh, I've got 30 seconds. you were going to hang me anyway when I told you what I was going to do, so you can't hang me in 30 seconds. It restrains overregulation by prohibiting ordinances that discriminatorily target rentals, such as bans on short-term users, requirements for owner occupancy, and to jump down, it affirms property rights by affirming rentals as residential land uses, barring licenses. I have a whole write-up on it. So for those of you that had a question about House Bill 583, I'd be glad to send that to you. I will answer that email.
Next, we'll hear from District 1 Senate, and to lead us off will be Scott Herndon.
One thing it's important to understand is the design of Idaho's Constitution. So we are what's called a Dillon's Rule State. Basically, what that means is that the Idaho legislature, you possess the power. Let's start with that. In the Idaho Constitution, the people of Idaho possess all the power. Then they grant it to their representatives to act as their agents in the state legislature. And then the state legislature gives some of that power back to local governmental agencies. So, for example, everything that the county does is mandated by Idaho code, which is your Idaho legislature. A city is a municipal corporation. It is literally created by Idaho code. It's not created in the Idaho Constitution. There's one part in the Constitution that says the legislature will address municipal corporations, but everything that a city does is created by the Idaho legislature. So we just have to understand the system that we're in before we start talking about local control. A lot of things are appropriately decided locally. I love the idea of local land use planning. I think it's very difficult as you move from one region of the state to another to say that Boise is going to make the best decision about what works in Bonner and Boundary County when it comes to local land use. But let's talk about flags on a government flagpole. I think it's reasonable to say that the flags on government-owned flagpoles, on municipal corporation flagpoles, represent the people of that municipal corporation. So it shouldn't be the LGBTQ flag if that represents only 5% of the population or 2% of the population or 1%. And then let's talk about firearm preemption. Firearm preemption is where the state of Idaho claims all of the control over where you can carry your firearm. And we do not allow cities and counties to regulate that beyond what's in state law. And so I think it depends on the subject. And I love the idea of firearm preemption, having that control be at the state level. Because then firearm owners, and that's very important to a lot of us here in Idaho, don't have to wonder what the law is as they pass from one county line to the next and one municipal corporation to the next. Thank you.
Mr. Woodward.
Well, I certainly believe in local control. I support it, and I vote for it. I trust you at the local to be able to make your own decisions. But that trend is going the trend in the legislature right now is taking it away. You heard how that system works, and the legislature continues to pull more and more of that back because I think they don't trust you. I do disagree with all that in some points, and I voted against that. So let's talk about that, the bathroom bill that came around this year because of the situation here in Sandpoint. Right now you'll see that out on social media. That's something that I agree with, right? That boys go in boys' bathrooms and girls go in girls' bathrooms. Yet if you looked on social media and saw my opponent's advertisement, you'd hear me say, as I debate on the floor, what I think is wrong with it, or I don't do like, and what I don't like. And what I do like is more is outweighs, and so I voted for it. Yet the advertising coming from the opponent is would leave you with the misleading conclusion that I voted against it, when in fact I voted for that bill. The flag bill, that's a political battle in Boise about that gay pride flag flying at the city capitol or city building, city hall in there in Boise. What it caused, though, was a little bit of collateral damage up here in Bonner's Ferry, where we've had the Canadian flag flying for many decades to symbolize that cross-border relationship, those people that we work with so often. There's a difference in approach to how you solve a problem. I went after amending that bill to make sure that the county or the district that I represent got a solution that worked for them. We amended the bill and did that on the floor. While I was trying to amend that bill, Scott Herndon was texting senators down there telling them that the other solution would be for the city to lease that property and let the city do what it wanted to do. Now, if you think about the festival and the analogy there, do you notice the hypocrisy?
For House 1A, Jane Sutter.
restate the question? I'm sorry. I was really deep into what he was saying.
Absolutely. I think I can. Let me find it. Yeah, okay, here we go. While you are running for a state office, we would like to know where you stand on local control. Local control includes things like flags, short-term rental regulation, speed limits, bike lanes, etc.
Okay, so local control. We did a phone poll last summer already, back in late July, asking people about issues that really mattered to them. And one of the top issues that people were saying was state spending and local control. So I do believe that local control is important, but I think when there's situations where you can't figure it out or where there's some discrepancies, that's when the state, that's what they're, like someone said, that's what they're hired to, that's what they're elected to do, is to step in those situations and determine what should happen. Now, I think you'll find it interesting that on H-583, limits the government's ability to regulate short-term rentals beyond matters of public health and safety, that the House voted overwhelmingly to support that, 54-16-0. And then also in the Senate, 23-12-0. So you can see at the legislative level, it overwhelmingly had support. So that indicates just how many communities and how many legislators had a grip on that decision and how that went. So yes, local control is very important, but there are times when the state does have to step in.
Mark Sauter.
I certainly support local control. I trust Idahoans to govern themselves. I voted against a number of the bills that have been discussed already, primarily because in our local situation, Sandpoint had a short-term rental policy that they're in the process of changing. I supported the idea that our city council here can make up their own decisions and do it locally. I don't think that the short-term rental issue or the ADU issue is one that should be settled in Boise. One size doesn't fit all. My opponent talked about, you know, the overwhelming interest. I think the overwhelming interest in Boise isn't always for our independent cities. We actually have fewer independent cities now than we did a few years ago. So independent cities are suffering. The state has pushed down a lot of costs on our local cities, and it's hurt them. In fact, they're finding that they can't balance their books anymore. Regarding the flag situation, I voted against a number of the flag bills, primarily because Ted Hill's down the hall from me in the House. When I asked him, so what is the issue with schools and flags? He said, well, there really isn't a problem in any of the schools. This is just something that I think needs to be done. So I can't vote. I don't think it's conservative to just vote for something that could be done or something that could happen. I think we ought to be spending our time solving problems, not just addressing something that we think could happen in the future. I ultimately voted for the flags in front of our government buildings, but only after they carved out Boundary County. I didn't think it was right to do it beforehand. So my opponent has pointed out I voted negatively on a few of the flag bills. That's correct. Until we get the bill right, I'm not going to vote yes on it. So thank you. I definitely support local control. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. We've come to the portion of tonight's program where it's time for you to share your two-minute closing statement. We will start with House 1A candidates. Mark Sauter will lead us off.
Should have stayed up here. Thank you. Well, it's been an honor to serve you. I'm asking for your vote. I'm a traditional conservative. I stand up, as we've talked about a lot tonight. I stand up for our District 1. I've done the traditional vote, taken the traditional votes, tax cuts, watching our spending. But I'm also very skeptical, and that's a conservative value as well. I don't care to run bills that don't work. I don't care to vote for a bill that doesn't solve a problem that we can identify. I do agree that we need to have sustainable communities, and I think we should vote to support those. Local control matters. We spent some time on that. I think really the real issue here is I think we want Idaho to stay Idaho, and I'm concerned that we are not going to keep Idaho being Idaho if we continue to let our power go down to Boise and we don't vote for our own district. So I'm asking for your vote. If you'd like to talk to me afterwards, I'll be outside. Thank you.
Thank you. Jane Sutter.
Well, I just want to thank you all for coming and informing yourselves. I hope that this has been helpful to you. No matter your political persuasion, I hope you'll easily be able to pick out three of the six people here who care about faith, family, and freedom, who stand for your rights, and who will work toward bringing real solutions to the table. My priorities are pretty straightforward. Protecting local control, keeping communities safe, supporting responsible growth, and defending parents' rights in all things pertaining to their children. These are not just talking points. These are the standards I'll use when I vote. I'm a lifetime Republican. I have decades of experience both in business and the Republican Party and in customer service. And I have the skills and integrity to represent you in Boise. Remember, an R behind a name does not guarantee you'll get their promises when they get to Boise. Idaho is worth fighting for. I'm asking for your vote on May 19th so that we can get to work. Thank you.
And now, our House Fund B candidates, Cornell Razor.
Mix me up like that. Thank you for being here today, for spending the time with us, and thank you for putting this on, Sandpoint Reader and Daily Bee. I appreciate it. Just a few things as I close out here. I have a Substack. You just go on, type in Substack, type in my name, and it comes up. I do what's called a session report at the end of every day. In my session, I created a little visage of what I did that day, what I did on committee, what I voted for, why I voted for things. Now, I couldn't put in all 350 bills, the reasons I voted for each, but I tried to pick the most controversial ones and put in my session report how I voted and why. And apparently it's pretty informational, because one woman told me, she said, "I really appreciate the detail you put into those session reports, and I'm going to use it to get you one elected." So if you contact me, I will respond. It might not happen right away. I did respond to somebody who contacted me in Boise in early March yesterday, because they were like 50 down in my texts and I missed them. But I will contact you back. I worked hard to make sure we met the needs that the state of Idaho had. And I also worked hard to look at removing the one-time funds that came in during ARPA. I know I'm jumping off a little bit of a rabbit trail here, but that came in on ARPA and COVID that ended up creating ongoing programs. That's one of the biggest issues that creates difficulty in the state budget, is items that were supposed to be one time that ended up staying in the budget. Those are things that I look for to try and get rid of. I will read every bill, I will work hard on every bill, and I will take legislation for you that meets your needs and will make Idahoans richer, safer, and as much as possible happier. But don't look to government for that. Look to God for that.
Amen. Chuck Lohman.
Here's a verse that helps me anchor myself sometimes. "Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, there is any virtue, and if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things." Oftentimes we get wrapped up in politics because we've made it an idol. And I'll tell you this, I'm here to serve because I've lived a life of service. This isn't an idol to me, this is a duty. I'm here because I see We're going in places that we shouldn't go. We're taking power away from local people. We're putting it in Boise, where 40% of the representatives lie in Ada and Canyon County. So if you think we're going to get income tax and sales tax monies pushed down to our counties the way it should be, you got to look at our schools, where we don't get the proportionate needs to meet the needs of our schools. But you know what? Our schools do some pretty awesome things. I want to share some successes our schools are having right now. Did you know that in Lake Pendere School District, 92% of our kindergartners are at reading level, 73% of first graders, 76% of second graders, and 76% of third graders are at reading level? We got 30 seconds here. Our high school is number one in ISAT, number two in ELA, and number three in math of all Idaho schools. Is that pretty awesome? The reason that can happen is because we have a very active and engaged school board and a very awesome superintendent who is a lovely woman, and I care a lot about her. They're doing it because they're exercising the leadership they need to meet the needs of our local community. Thank you.
And now District 1 Senate, Jim Woodward.
Thank you. Just to provide a little perspective on that local control and the short-term rental issue, because a few of us lived that battle this year, especially those of us coming from a resort community. And really, I don't want you to leave with the wrong perception on that, because what happened there was that Airbnb and Vrbo, two large companies, came in and forced that upon us here in the state of Idaho. In fact, it went even beyond their own guidelines. But we came up with absolutely zero regulation, where a city can't even ask for a contact phone number so that if there is a problem with a short-term rental, that they know who to get a hold of. That's not local control. That's not Idaho standing up for itself. So I just wanted to share that with you, that's another example, though, of that the lobbyists coming in and money coming in. My name is Jim Woodward. I think I'm asking to serve again as your state senator. I stand in stark contrast, I believe, to my opponent. I'm asking that I listen to you, that we talk, and then I go to Boise and represent you. I think that compares to it, or stands in contrast to a top-down authoritarian control based on a narrow ideology. And when you don't agree with that ideology, you become the enemy. I'm vested in this community. I believe the proper role of government is those basic services that we provide through state government. That's public safety, education, transportation. These are the decisions that affect you every day. These are the problems I work to solve. I don't want to end up living on the backs of our children because we haven't taken the responsibility to deal with the problems, those infrastructure problems and other basic systems. Thank you for participating tonight. I just have one request, that you get out and ask your neighbor to vote if they aren't here tonight. So thank you. May 19th.
Scott Herndon.
So my name is Scott Herndon, and before we finish tonight, I just want to say that Sandpoint has done a great job just in the last 6 months. As a community, we had a real problem at the Sandpoint YMCA. A lifeguard, Jennifer Hook, went into the locker room there, found a male using the female locker room, found out that was the Sandpoint YMCA policy, found out there was no law against it in Idaho. Sandpoint actually rallied around, and we got a bill passed that Cornell Razor carried very successfully in the House and the Senate. And we actually are the first state in the nation leading on that subject. We criminalized men who intentionally would go into a women's locker room and shower with girls. And that is now a crime in the state of Idaho. And it's because, and while we were passing that bill and Cornell Razor was doing such a great job, people from Sandpoint testified in favor of that bill, and they were such a help, and it was great to see that representation. I want to commend Dale Hawkins. He represents southwestern Bonner County and three of our precincts, that he worked so hard for a couple of years to get legislation passed on immigration reform. that he's worked for a couple years to get a gun bill so you can carry your gun on all public property in the state of Idaho, that he's worked to get that constitutional amendment on your right to educate your children without government regulation. I want to commend him, and then I want to get back to the Senate to work on those battles for the people of Idaho and for the people of our area, and a lot of other work that we've talked about tonight in the area of education. So I want to end by talking about my primary goal is eliminate property tax in the state of Idaho. Right now, if we eliminate property tax, we can eliminate the fights neighbors have to have over these levy elections that we also face. The battle there is that we don't want to kick the fixed income senior out of her home, and we also want to have true private property finally in the state of Idaho, where you're not renting your 116-year-old family land and home from your government. So let's get this done. Ask for your vote on May 19th for Scott Herndon.
I'd like to thank all the candidates this evening. Please give them one more big round of applause. On behalf of the Bonner County Daily Bee and our media partners, KRFY, Sandpoint Online, and the Sandpoint Reader, as well as the Selkirk Association of Realtors, we've certainly enjoyed our time this evening, and we'd like to thank you one more time for participating. Thank you to all of you that helped organize tonight's event, especially Chris Bessler, Carolyn Lobsinger, the staff of the Bonner County Daily Bee, and Sandpoint High School and their staff, and Jack Peterson. We hope the candidate forum has helped inform voters as they prepare to cast their ballot, either through absentee ballot or on Election Day on May the 19th. Most importantly, get out and vote. It's one of the most powerful rights and responsibilities you have as an American. Thank you again, and good night.